Why do you live the way that you live? There are many different elements that influence the way that we choose to live out our lives. The way we were raised, the principles we believe in, the situations we find ourselves in, and the people we look up to all deeply influence the way that we choose to live out our lives. And when we choose to live out our lives in certain ways, there are certain consequences that naturally happen as a result of these choices. The book of Proverbs illustrates this principle at several points. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it, Proverbs 13:11. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but the cheerful of heart has a continual feast, Proverbs 15:15. Whoever keeps a commandment keeps his life. He who despises his ways will die, Proverbs 19:16. Throughout the book of Proverbs, we see a certain theme pop up again and again. People who choose to live in certain ways will receive certain rewards or punishments. This principle is at the core of developing a story's theme. After our last lesson, you should have a pretty good idea of what your story's theme is, what your story's focusing question is, and what your story's message is. Today, we're going to take those elements and begin to look at what it means to weave those elements into your story at its deepest levels. That begins with understanding a character's experiments in living. So today, we're going to explain what an experiment in living is, talk about why it's crucial to theme, and explain the principles of poetic justice, and explain how these together form the basic building block of your story's theme. Let's jump into it. I'll begin by defining what exactly an experiment in living is, since it isn't a common writing term. An experiment in living is what happens when a character decides to live by a certain set of principles or beliefs. Maybe a character decides to live by the belief that revenge will bring him satisfaction. Maybe a character decides to live by the principle that mercy is better than retribution. Either way, it's a choice a character makes about a way he's going to live his or her life. And it's a choice that can either be a conscious or an unconscious decision. This choice will form the core of your story's theme. For example, in The Count of Monte Cristo, Edmond Dantès's experiment in living is the belief that he is God's instrument of justice who's called to revenge himself on his enemies. In Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Goldilocks' experiment in living is that the idea that it's fine to use someone else's stuff without asking. In Captain America the Winter Soldier, Steve Rogers' experiment in living is his belief that being free is better than being safe, and that freedom should be defended at all costs. In each of these stories, the main character has made a choice that some value is important in life, and that he's going to live a certain way because of those principles. This forms their experiment in living, and you'll see this all across fiction. Pick up any work of fiction, and I can just about guarantee you that you'll find the main character engaging in at least one experiment in living. Now, one thing about experiments in living is that often you're going to have multiple experiments in living in one story, not only with different characters living different experiments, but also with the same character living different experiments. Sometimes a character is living out multiple experiments at once, and sometimes he moves from one to another. So when you're analyzing different books for their experiments in living, you want to watch out for that. While short stories normally just have time for one experiment in living, in longer novels, you're much more likely to see several experiments in living happening at once. And in our next lesson, we'll be talking about what that looks like. What I want you to see right now, though, is that a properly executed experiment in living strikes at the core of how we act as human beings. Let me repeat that. A properly executed experiment in living strikes at the core of how we act as human beings. To unpack this, we're going to need to go way back in time to the earliest work on fiction writing that we have today. The name of this work is Poetics, and it was written by Aristotle, the last of the three great Greek philosophers. In this work, he said that all forms of art, from poetry to plays to paintings to music, were all at their root imitations. He wrote, "Artists imitate men involved in action, and these must either be noble or base, since human character regularly conforms to these distinctions." Another way of putting it is that all art, at its core, is supposed to mimic aspects of human nature in real life. This theory is known as mimesis, which is a Greek word for imitation. Today, when most literary scholars talk about mimesis, they use the term to refer to how different works of art imitate previous works of art. but it was originally meant to describe how art imitates nature, with a particular emphasis of how it imitates human nature. In other words, what the mimesis theory means for you as a writer is that you should write stories with characters that mirror real people in real life. The interesting thing about mimesis is that it isn't just important to the moral aspects of storytelling. As Sir Philip Sidney, an English poet and scholar living during the Renaissance, wrote, "Poesy, by which he means poetry, or what we today would call general storytelling, is an art of imitation, that is to say, a representing, counterfeiting, or figuring forth, to speak metaphorically, a speaking picture, with this end, to teach and delight." This is crucial. Not only does Sidney connect Aristotle to Horace by connecting mimesis with the dual purpose of literature, but he also points out that mimesis isn't just important to tell a moral story, it's important to tell an enjoyable story as well. Think about it this way. Have you ever been watching a movie or reading a book and enjoying it a fair bit, but then a character either does something they would never actually do, or something ridiculous happens that would never happen in real life, and suddenly the movie or book really isn't that enjoyable anymore? This is what Sidney's talking about. If a story is blatantly unrealistic, we're not going to find it enjoyable anymore. And so mimesis not only makes a story moral, but it makes it enjoyable as well. As the famed literary critic Samuel Johnson said, "Nothing can please many and please long, but just representations of general nature." Experiments in living therefore work because this is how people act in real life. Conversely, good experiments in living are those that seem the most realistic and authentic to how real people actually act. So then, how do you write a good experiment in living? Well, you want to begin by looking at your story's theme, and specifically at the different possible answers you wrote up for your story's focusing question. Then, either create a set of values or principles off of the story's theme, or just use one of the possible answers you created for your focusing question and make that your character's experiment in living. Now, one common mistake is to immediately make your protagonist's experiment in living the same thing as the story's message. And you don't want to automatically do that. This can work for a story, but it also works to pick a different wrong answer to the experiment in living. I'll be showing later on in this video and the next one how you can make a strong moral point just as easily this way. But the important thing is that you take one of the possible answers and begin to expand that into a set of values and principles that your character is going to live by. Once we've done that, you want to begin to put yourself in your character's shoes. Why would someone choose to live by these sets of principles? What past experiences may have led to this? And what would it look like for someone to fully live by these sets of principles? The more you can put yourself into the mind of someone who thinks with this mindset, the better your story is going to be. So think about how this is going to taint your character's view of the world. How does she interact with her environment differently? How does she interact with problems differently? And how is she going to act with people who have different experiments in living? All of this is going to play into how your character views the world. Let's take the courage example we were talking about in the last lesson and the question about how you find the courage to fight adversity. There are several possible answers you could provide to this question. For example, you could find courage through practicing courage in easier situations, through simply gritting your teeth and wrestling through it, or through avoiding adversity whenever possible. Let's take our protagonist and decide that his experiment in living is going to be that you find the courage to overcome adversity by just gritting your teeth and moving through it. You don't spend time introspecting, reaching within yourself to find courage, you just do it. So now you want to get into the mind of someone who thinks like this. What experiences in the past would make him believe this proposition? And then what does it look like to experience adversity when you believe this? How would this character view someone who uses a lot of introspection to try and find courage? How does he view people who run away from adversity? How does this influence the way that he tackles adversity? These are all questions you want to ask when developing a character's experiment in living. There are, however, some pitfalls that you can run into when trying to create an experiment in living, especially when you're trying to depict a negative experiment in living realistically. It can be a challenge to depict someone acting immorally in a realistic yet moral way. Here are three common pitfalls you want to avoid. The first pitfall is to expect your character to always act logically according to their worldview. This looks like that one atheist character in Christian fiction who is just an awful person, hates Christians, hates morality, and only lives for himself. The problem with this is that while we as Christians understand that this is the logical end of atheism, most atheists don't act like this. Atheists can perform acts of self-sacrifice and humility just like Christians do. Why? Because humans are dichotomous creatures. We deceive ourselves, and we often have multiple experiments in living that contradict with each other. So someone may have an experiment in living that living for oneself is better than living for someone else, but she may also have an experiment in living that investing in family brings the most joy in life. Do these experiments contradict each other? Absolutely. But people in real life act like this as well. Recall the principle of mimesis. You want to portray realistic characters and mimic real people in your stories. So don't expect your character to always act logically according to their worldview. The second pitfall is to make your character immediately eager to experience redemption. This looks like that one evil character that really wants to be good. The problem with this is that people generally hate changing their experiment in living because it's really hard to do so. At the beginning of your story, your character shouldn't already want change. They should be content in their flawed experiment in living. Now, this doesn't mean that they can't eventually change their experiment, and we'll be talking about how characters do change in the next lesson. But people often need to be forced to change. The last common pitfall is to make your character completely unsympathetic. Now, this may seem like a good idea at first. After all, if a character is living wrongly, you don't want to tempt your readers to act like this by writing a sympathetic character in a negative experiment in living. However, the problem with this is twofold. First, if your protagonist is unsympathetic, people aren't likely to read your story. But on a deeper level, you want your reader to put themselves into your character. You want your readers to understand why this character does what she does and see those same tendencies within themselves. This leads to a question, though. If you want your readers to find the protagonist somewhat sympathetic, how do you keep them from going along with the protagonist in the belief that their experiment in living is right? This is a great question, and this leads us to the second big topic that I want to cover in this video, namely, the principle of poetic justice. Poetic justice is a principle that dictates that virtues and vices are rewarded or punished in an appropriate manner. Specifically in literature, it's the idea that the good are rewarded and the wicked are punished. This is present all across literature and across the Bible. For example, think back to the three Proverbs we discussed at the beginning of the video and look at the consequences for those actions. If you gain wealth slowly, you'll prosper. If you're cheerful, you have a feast. If you despise God's commandments, you'll die. This is justice being enacted time and time again, and there's a measure of appropriateness to it. It's kind of like those stories you hear about stupid criminals who check their Facebook on a public computer while robbing a house and forget to log out, or who lock their keys in a getaway car. We enjoy these stories not only because justice is served, but because it's being served in an appropriate way. This principle is found all throughout great literature. In the Odyssey, Odysseus shows mercy to the weak, displays cleverness in avoiding his enemies, and seeks to be a just ruler. As a result, he succeeds in getting back to his wife and kingdom. In the Song of Roland, Roland, the protagonist, decides to shame his uncle in front of the king and send him on a suicide mission. Because of this, his uncle decides to ally with the main villain, and their joined forces kill Roland. In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Pensieves support Aslan as the true king of Narnia over the White Witch. As a result, they are made kings and queens of Narnia. In all these examples, you can see poetic justice time and time again. Virtues are rewarded and vices are punished, often in appropriate manners. This principle may lead to a question, however. How does this principle handle martyrs? What do we do with books like A Tale of Two Cities, where the protagonist dies for doing the right thing? Did Sidney Carton get punished for his moral choice? I would argue that here, the nature of the reward is determined by what the character desires. For Sidney Carton, his desire above all else was to achieve a meaningful life. Even though he dies, he brings meaning but to his life by becoming an honorable person through his death. So while he may have seemingly lost, he actually obtained the most valuable thing he desired. The principle of poetic justice doesn't mean that things can't be bittersweet for the protagonist, but it does demand that characters who act virtuously get the thing that they, in their virtuous nature, perceive as most important. Now, when you combine the principle of poetic justice with the practice of experiments in living, something amazing happens, because this is where we discover the absolute core of theme. Often, a danger with experiments in living is that we try to tell the reader if it's a good or bad experiment in living by, well, just telling them in the text. If a villain is attempting a bad experiment in living, we make characters tell him that it's wrong, and we try to explicitly praise good actions and denounce evil actions in our authorial voice. But what happens if we apply poetic justice to experiments in living? Suddenly, we no longer need to tell the reader that it's bad to run away from adversity. We just allow the character to be a coward and run away from adversity, and then we show the reader the consequences by allowing the adversity to severely hurt the character and everyone around them. We don't need to tell the reader that courage is good. We just show the reader how courageous individuals are rewarded, and nothing more needs to be said. We've shown the reader moral truths instead of telling them, and that makes it that much more powerful. This, then, is the basic building block of theme. We set up an experiment in living, and we follow it out to its natural end. What happens when you choose to live according to these principles? Do you succeed, or do you fail? This is why Christians will always, in some sense, tend to write Christian fiction, whether or not God is explicitly mentioned in a work. Our faith defines for us what poetic justice looks like. In a well-written moral story, the result of an experiment in living will show you whether or not it was a good experiment in living. This isn't just my idea. All three authors I've mentioned before in this video, Aristotle, Johnson, and Sidney, they all held to this principle as well and looked for it in storytelling. Johnson even criticizes Shakespeare because he believes Shakespeare didn't use this principle enough. So let's apply this to the example of our individual who believes you find the courage to overcome adversity by just gritting your teeth and moving through it. What do you want the end of this experiment in living to be? Well, the answer depends on what your message is. Is the message of your story that this is how you find the courage to overcome adversity? In that case, you let this character succeed. So he ends up finding courage in the story by just gritting his teeth and wrestling through it. But what if this isn't your message? What if instead, you want the message of your story to be that you do need to use introspection and dig deep within yourself to find courage? Well, in that case, poetic justice dictates what we do next. This character has to fail. You would begin by showing how he will just try to muscle his way through adversity, and then you need to set him against an adversity that is so tough and so opposing that he loses courage, turns around, and runs. Gritting his teeth wasn't enough to get courage, and so he fails to overcome the adversity. Now, depending on your story, the plot might end here, or it may continue on. Next time, we'll be talking about how you pile multiple experiments in living on top of each other to form a character arc. But what I hope you begin to see here is how theme will unite both plot and character. By setting up an experiment in living and then showing the consequences of that experiment, you not only create a deep and fascinating character, but the consequences of that experiment in living should be driving a good portion of the plot, as the examples I've provided have shown. We'll be continuing to note this unifying aspect of theme more and more as we delve into character arcs. Before we move into character arcs though, let's look at the homework. Today, I want you to take the 5 different answers to the focusing question you came up with in the last lesson and turn each of them into a separate experiment in living. Now, this may be as simple as simply copy-pasting the answer to the previous homework into this one, but you may need to tweak it as well to make it a realistic experiment in living. Some of the best experiments in living are those which are flawed, but which are deeply sympathetic. So make sure that you're tweaking them in ways that follow the mimesis principle and mirror the ways that real people act in real life. Once you've created these 5 different experiments in living, I want you to take 2 of them and develop them to be a bit more complex and deeper than the others. Begin to put yourself in that character's shoes and examine the way that they view the world. Then, consider if you want to praise or condemn the view and how poetic justice will factor into that. Remember that poetic justice doesn't only consist of the internal consequences of that action, so consider what kind of physical consequences would exhibit an appropriate kind of justice. Once you've created those experiments in living and begun to apply poetic justice to them, you'll be ready to move on to the next lesson.